The Wisconsin Wetlands Association is announcing a publication of Wisconsin's Wetland Gems. It is a full-color guide to Wisconsin's 100 wetland gems. And these are very high-quality habitats that represent the wetland riches that historically make up about a quarter of Wisconsin's landscape. Talking about the book and about Wisconsin wetlands today with Katie Belfus. She is Outreach Programs Director with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Glad to have her along. And certainly, if you want to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got a question about wetlands in your area. Maybe you've got a question about the book or just wetlands in general. Join us. Again, 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Katie Belfus, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Really appreciate having you with us today. And we still have a lot of great wetlands here in the state. We've lost a lot of wetlands.
We have, unfortunately, lost a lot of wetlands. We've lost nearly half of Wisconsin's original 10 million acres of wetlands over the years, mostly since European settlement in the 1800s. The main reasons for this loss is the development of our culture and lifestyle here in Wisconsin and in the nation, the draining of land so that we can develop large-scale agriculture, the buildings of towns and cities, and the development that occurs as a result of that, and also the logging of our forests. And this is actually something I've learned recently. Even when the forests on the uplands were logged, as they were quite extensively early in our state's history, that has a dramatic impact on the downstream, downslope wetlands, so to speak, because of the way that it changes the water cycle and how water cycles through, how much water flows into the ground versus across the surface, and where the water goes once those forests are cut. So, and particularly up north, that has had a very large impact historically.
Tell us a little more about what the Wisconsin Wetlands Association is up to these days.
We've got our hands in all kinds of fires, I suppose you could say. Our organization, we're dedicated to the protection, restoration, and enjoyment of wetlands and their associated ecosystems in Wisconsin. And we do that through a two-pronged approach, outreach, which is what I work on, outreach and education, trying to help spread the word about wetlands, why they're important, why they matter, and why they're so beautiful, ways to enjoy them. And then also through advocacy and policy work, trying to make sure that our state's very strong wetland protection laws are upheld and carried out in the land and improving them where they need improvements.
Well, we have callers online. Ben in Mequon is up, so let's turn to Ben. Hi, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. The comment I'd like to make, Katie had mentioned the loss of wetlands over European settlement. We can look at another loss of wetland benefits with the invasion of reed canary grass. I see wetlands all over the state, all over the Midwest for that matter, being smothered out by this plant, which destroys native plants, destroys the benefit for a lot of wildlife that use the wetlands. That's my comment.
Yeah.
Ben, that's a very good point. And unfortunately, reed canary grass is not the only plant in that category or species in that category. We have both plants and animals that are posing threats to Wisconsin's wetlands. Purple loosestrife is one, reed canary grass, Phragmites. There's, unfortunately, a long list. Happily, the DNR last year approved a new rule that helps us in that battle against invasive species, both ones that affect wetlands and in general, identifying restricted and prohibited species in terms of sale and distribution. So they've got some good information about that and are doing some good work to try to prevent that. And I think the most important point that Ben brought to the conversation is that you can have a wetland, you can have an area that still looks like a marsh, as most people understand it, but because the species diversity within that wetland has changed because of the introduction of invasive species, the functional value or the ecosystem services provided by that wetland do change. There might be a change in the species that could build nests there, bird species, or a competition that drives out the native plant species that might live there. And I think ecosystem services or functional values is an important thing for everybody to be aware of. Wetlands do an important service in terms of absorbing floodwaters and releasing them slowly over time, so trying to prevent or minimize damage to communities. They clean our water. They're very important in terms of filtering out pollutants and sediments before waters go into our lakes, rivers, and streams. They provide animal habitat, including wildlife and fisheries, so people who enjoy fishing. There's some very critical spawning habitat that is just in wetlands that the animals use, the lakes and rivers, in their adult period, but their infancy is in these wetlands. And so there's lots of reasons why they're important and provide really important benefits to all of us.
Am I there yet?
Yes.
Another comment I'd like to add, Katie, the DNR ruling is advisory only. It is left up to individual communities to enact their own invasive weed ordinances. I have been after Mequon for several years to do something. The person on the Public Welfare Committee won't even listen to me to get this issue addressed in our community.
Well, thank you, Ben, for your work trying to bring this issue to your community's attention, and I encourage others who are listening today to do the same. And we all have to start somewhere, and I think having a rule that outlines what these species are and what the problems that they bring to our environment are will start that process of education. They're putting together some very nice full-color fact sheets that are going to be available. Some of them already are on the DNR website that you can take to your perhaps not this gentleman who doesn't seem to want to talk to you, but somebody else in your community. And slowly, you know, education and change takes a long time, attitude change and behavioral change. So we have to start somewhere. And I encourage you to keep on the good fight and partner up with folks in your community that can help you.
Thanks very much for calling, Ben. Appreciate it. As you look at a wetland, what are the components of a good wetland?
Well, there's three main things that people should look for when they're trying to decide if a given place is a wetland or not. One is, does the area have standing water for all or part of the year? And that part of the year thing is really important because there's many of our state's wetlands that are dry for much of the year. And because they're dry in August or September, they don't look like wetlands. And sometimes we have fill of wetlands or construction on wetlands that happens in that fall season when things are dry. And people say, well, I was wet. I didn't know it was a wetland. But I would argue that you don't. Our lakes freeze in the winter, and we can drive trucks across them sometimes in the winter. And you wouldn't ever argue that a lake is not a lake because you can drive your truck on it. And so I would ask you to similarly treat wetlands in that way. Look at the wetlands, look at the area throughout the year and see if there's standing water in the spring or early summer, because that's when many of our wetlands are wet. The second thing is, does the area have wetland soil? Certain soils develop under wet conditions. And you can see that it looks different, it feels different, it smells different, and can be a very good indicator, even if that area has been drained for a period of time for agriculture or whatnot. And third, does the area support plants that are adapted to wet conditions? Wetland plants have come up with all kinds of great strategies for dealing with the fact that they're underwater all or part of the year. Cattails are really spongy if you feel them, and many wetland plants are that way to help get oxygen into the plant when it's underwater and not in the air. Just as one example, some people might be familiar with mangroves or cypress swamps where you see those little knees sticking out of the water. Mm-hmm. That's bits of the roots coming up. So we don't have as many of those in Wisconsin, but just to give people a picture of one of the adaptations that wetland plants adopt.
Well, again, you can join in, by the way, if you have a question or comment about wetlands as we visit with Katie Belfus. And actually, we haven't gotten into it yet, but there's a new guidebook out of Wetland Gems I want to talk with her about as well. So join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Now, this new book is absolutely beautiful. It's called Wetland Gems. From your organization, and we've got 100.
We do. This is a program that some of your listeners might remember hearing about last year,
because
you had me on
last
year when we first announced this list of sites, and we created the majority of the materials that are in this book last year as individual, downloadable, free pieces of paper, and we still have all those on our website. But I made myself a bound copy to take around to the various events that I attended last year to help promote this program, and everywhere I went, people said, where can I get that? And so we gussied it up a little bit, and we realized that it's an example of the whole being greater than the sum of the parts, that we had a lot of beautiful pieces, but that when we actually put them together in one bound copy, the story that it tells is very powerful. As you pointed out, the photographs throughout this full color guide, we have photos of all of the sites that we're featuring. We have photos of fish and dragonflies and salamanders and frogs and birds and plants, all the beautiful, wonderful species that make up our Wisconsin wetlands. And I think when you can sort of page through each one and see the diversity and beauty, it really helps to develop a greater sense of appreciation and maybe even love for these wetlands of Wisconsin.
And how to find them.
And how to find them. Yep, there's for each of the wetland gems, as you said, there's 100. There's a one-page fact sheet that has information about who owns the property, what recognitions or designations have been awarded that property, the ecology and significance, the flora, plants and animals, and birds that you might find there. Some threats that might exist for that site, and maybe the invasive species that Ben brought up earlier, and then also access information. And because we don't own wetlands, that's not our mission. These are all sites that are owned by other agencies and organizations, and they need to be in charge of directing people to where to go to visit. So we've listed websites and phone numbers that people can contact to get more information about how best to access the site. So we leave that to the owner to decide how to do that. Yeah. So do plan ahead if you want to use this as a travel guide for Wisconsin, which we hope people will. Take a look at your destination and
we'll
find
talk
out the details.
And we'll talk some more about it with Katie Belfast here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at Wisconsin wetlands today with Katie Belfast, Outreach Program Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. The association has a new publication of Wisconsin's Wetland Gems. It's a full-color guide to Wisconsin's 100 wetland gems, and it is a beautiful, beautiful book. The photography is outstanding, and you really got a break on the photography for that.
We have a big thank you to shout out to all of the photographers. I think it's as many as 70 different individuals from around the state, some professionals, some just folks who love wetlands and are good at taking pictures, that contributed their work so that we could do this. So there's no way we could have put this publication or any of these materials together without that donation, and really want to thank all those folks, and we've listed them in the book there. They've done dramatic work, and it's really the only way that you can tell the beauty of wetlands is through pictures and visits.
And the book certainly, as you and I were talking during our news break here, as I looked through, I said, I'm going to go to every one. They're all beautiful.
Well, lots of bird watchers have their Twitcher list, their list of birds that they tick off, you know, every time they see them, and they have their life list. And maybe we can start a new movement of wetland gem life listers that want to go around and visit all 100. I certainly have never been to all 100, and I'd love to get there.
And the book, you're not making any, there's no profit in this book
there's,
at all.
When you think about all the staff time that's put into it, there's really minimal profit on this book whatsoever. We hope to maybe cover our costs in the long run putting it together, but it's worth it because our mission is to get this book and the information this book has into people's hands as part of our effort to educate folks about Wisconsin's wetlands. So we hope people pick up a copy.
And where do you get copies?
Well, we're selling them out of our office at the moment, and you can call us at 608-250-9971. There's also an order form on our website, which is wisconsinwetlands.org. We also, I'm happy to say, as of this morning, we'll be selling them at the Middleton Public Library. And it's exciting for me because the sales of those books will also go to benefit the Pheasant Branch Conservancy and the Middleton Public Library. So we're not only getting this beautiful book in people's hands, but we're also protecting and helping out with the efforts in Middleton to protect Pheasant Branch Conservancy, which is one of the 100 wetland gems detailed in this book. So, and we hope over time to get the book in more retail outlets, more libraries, and it'll take a little bit of time, but we're dedicated to that.
There.
So, yeah.
Great. Well, Peter in Madison is a question or comment. Thank you for waiting, Peter. Hello.
Hello, Katie and Larry.
Hi.
Yeah, I had visited the Somerton Bog, which is near Packwaukee, by invitation of the Audubon Society. And I've been in bogs up north, but I'm interested in bogs that might be near the Madison area, maybe within an hour or so.
Well, a great place is Cedarburg Bog, which is a little further east in Ozaukee County, I think. I'd have to go look up the details, but it's one of our wetland gems, and it's in the book. It's the UW Field Station is located there. There's definitely public trails and boardwalks there. The DNR also is an owner there. That's one beautiful place. Beulah Bog is also nearby Wisconsin. It's down in Walworth County. near Madison. And so those are two that I might recommend. And they're unique because they're sort of out of their range. As you pointed out, most bogs in Wisconsin are up north. And those two and a couple of others are unique because they're found in southern Wisconsin. We're a little bit worried to see what's going to happen to those beautiful sites that are a little bit outside their range when climate change starts bringing more impacts to Wisconsin. We hope that they'll, with good management, they'll still be able to keep a foothold here.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Dave in New Berlin, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I just have a question about what I can do personally. I've got a lot in New Berlin, and in the spring there's a lot of water there, and then it gets dry and hard as a rock. So I've tried to do a little conservation on my own little piece of land, planting some cattails in the drainage ditch and planting a small plot of prairie grass. So if it's not off the subject, I was just wondering what I can personally do to help that situation.
Well, three cheers for you for wanting to do your own part there and for some of the work that it sounds like you've taken on already. Our organization does have a handbook that we published in collaboration with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources that's a guide to wetland restoration for Wisconsin landowners. Now, I'll warn you that it is generally more geared towards larger scale restoration on like old farmland and whatnot. But I think a lot of the tools that are recommended through that book would apply at a smaller scale as well. And there's certainly a lot of good references in that book. We have nearly sold out of that book. And I'm really happy to say we're going to be able to republish that again this summer. We reprint it because it's been such in demand. But we have you can order it through our office or the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources also has copies.
All right.
Hey, great. Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks so much.
Joan in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I am so happy that that book is being published. I hope that you get it to developers, and I hope that you get it to some of the people who own land and are great snowmobilers, and to the water companies. It's the developers. It's these humans that are destroying our wetland. I've owned a piece of wetland near the Dells for over 50 years. I've paid taxes every year. I've never stepped on it. And yet when right across in the next area where there was no zoning in Adams County, Perry A. Nestle's was given a permit to drill water, 500 gallons of water a minute, free without an environmental impact statement. And if we hadn't sued them, that would have happened. And that takes, as Ben Logan says, land remembers and it's all connected. And many, many people don't understand that. The other problem is people in cities like Wisconsin Dells that have a wonderful ethic, but not to save the land. And by annexing, they can take whatever property they want. And the great farms of cattle that the DNR has control over, or should, they have to pollute when you have 8,000 cows on a farm before something is done. It ought to be the other way. You've got to prove that it's not going to pollute the water, because this is eventually going to go into all of the water, and our groundwater is very, very precious.
Well, thank you for calling, Joan. Comment, Katie?
Well, she has a lot of important issues there, and I'll just touch on a couple of them so we can keep things moving along. First, I wanted to say another initiative that we are carrying out is we put out last year a guide called the Local Decision Maker's Guide to Wetland Conservation, and it was a guide designed for local, towny, village, and county agency staff who are sort of at the front lines, as you point out, of granting permits for all kinds of things, for development, for drilling, for whatnot, to help them understand the importance and value of wetlands and to understand some of the state and federal laws and regulations that they need to be aware of. I'm happy to say this spring, Governor Doyle signed into law a new bill that will require those local agency folks to inform people when they come in to apply for a local permit that they also need to be aware that there are certain state and federal permits that may be applicable in that current situation so that folks have that information, because often that was a missing link where a local jurisdiction would issue a building permit, the person would go out and do their project, and then they'd get in trouble because they hadn't gotten a state or federal permit and they needed it, but they didn't know. So now we're going to close that gap up a little bit. You're very right, Joan, that the folks on the front line are the folks that need information about the importance of wetlands and what they need to do to protect them and the ways that they benefit their community. And so our Local Decision Maker's Guide is one way that we're doing that. Hopefully this Wetland Gems Lands book can be another tool that we can use to help people fall in love with wetlands.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Joan. Appreciate your call. And we'll turn to some other callers. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Excuse me. Let's turn to Elizabeth now in Genoa City. Elizabeth, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had just returned from Wyasuling State Park on the Wisconsin and Mississippi River.
Wyasuling.
I was astounded when we took the canoe loop in the overflow of the Mississippi through and then south on the Mississippi and back. How I didn't think I saw any reed grass because we have it so abundantly here in the Nipissing Creek area. It's almost all you see, maybe 5-10% of flowers, but otherwise it's all reed grass. And over there, there was such a diversity. It was incredibly beautiful. And I was wondering if you knew what they did there. I'd like to find out how they managed to do that beautiful job over there, but also how we can work on our local area to control and hopefully get rid of it and get the native species back in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Wyalusing State Park is a phenomenally beautiful area. It is one of our Wisconsin wetland gems. And I would also like to know how they don't have reed canary grass back in there. I don't know, and I would have to connect you with somebody else. But I do know that many natural communities, when they are strong and robust, can defend themselves from invasive species. And often, when invasive species get into a natural community, it's because there is some injury, much like human bodies get infected when we get cuts and wounds. That's the source of the infection is the cut or the wound and the injury. And the natural communities function in much the same way. So perhaps Wyalusing State Park is a robust enough community. Although I don't doubt that they're doing management there, and perhaps they're doing control work. I simply don't know. And congratulations to them if they are.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Elizabeth, for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions or comments and email at talk@wpr.org. Eva emailed us, as a matter of fact, and wonders about whether you could give your opinion of using wetlands, be they natural or created, to filter gray water, as is seen in some permaculture setups. Do you think that it may be better to run it through these natural filters rather than through traditional septic or in ground drains?
That's a great point, and I think it's a growing trend that we see both in sort of large-scale building design. Sometimes people are incorporating gray water wetlands. Then there's lots of local examples of that as well. I think it's a terrific way. I think we spend a lot of money on what we call gray infrastructure to treat water, and I think we could look at doing more funding of green infrastructure solutions to stormwater and sedimentation issues at small and large scales. So good for you for doing that, Eva.
Let's turn to Dennis in Wood County next. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple questions for your guest. One is, if she's familiar with marsh skis. They're like cross-country skis, only you get around on marshes. And another comment is the Wetlands Association doing anything to promote tax credits for landowners who have wetlands that are considered water recharge zones?
Well, as to the marsh skis, I would like to know where to get a pair because that sounds fun. Maybe it's a way to get across an area that you might sink through, sort of like we wear snowshoes in the winter so we don't sink in. So that sounds like a really interesting way to get around when it's not winter. In regards to tax credits, I do know our organization has been working for years, and we continue to work, and I think in the coming year we'll work more on looking at the tax disincentive that we see for people who want to restore wetlands on their property because of the way that our taxation system works with use value taxation. And Aaron O'Brien, who's our policy director and our staff, is working very hard on that initiative, and we hope to see some developments there to try to make sure that we don't have a disincentive for landowners who want to do wetland restoration on their property. I don't know about the specific issue that Dennis raised, the tax credit that he's... What was that, Dennis?
Well, it's... basically the same thing as where you have agricultural hills, and they have tax incentives not to plant there to create erosion control.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're basically talking about loss of topsoil, whereas I'm talking about loss of wetlands that are used to recharge water for everyone.
Yep.
And you have money coming in for a landowner to be an incentive to stop planting or use corrective measures, but yet on the other hand, for something as critical as water recharge zones, there is no incentive to maintain it or keep a balance there in your wetland areas.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, it's the use value taxation and what category is your property being taxed at, and I am not the expert of our office on that, and so I'll defer that to another program where Erin can talk about the work that she's doing there, but that's an interesting issue, and I'll be curious to see what Erin has to say when I get back to the office.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dennis, for calling. Appreciate your call. And you might even go online to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association website, post that question to Erin, and she might have an answer.
She just might.
Mary in Fort Atkinson, we turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hi, Katie and Larry.
Hi.
I'm pretty familiar with the work of Wisconsin Wetlands, and I love their GEMS program. I just think it's terrific. And what I want to talk about is right near my little home here in Fort Atkinson is one of the most fabulous wetlands called Rose Lake, and it's a state natural area. And right now, the dragonflies and damselflies are just stunning around there, as well as the waterfowl, etc. And it's just a beautiful place to be. I try to get over there about twice a week. And I just want to say that, you know, the reason why this wetland is here and it's beautiful and it's being restored is because there are local people who are really excited about that wetland. And we have a little group here that keeps track of that wetland and keeps everything going.
That sounds great.
Well, Mary, I want to thank you for calling in, and you reminded me to make a point that this book that we're talking about here today features 100 high-quality wetland representatives in the state of Wisconsin, but by no means is it all of the wetlands that we have, nor is it the best, necessarily, that we have. But we wanted to provide a sort of a look into what wetlands are in Wisconsin, and there are thousands of wetlands. And I have to say, I believe it's 75% of Wisconsin's remaining wetlands are in private ownership. And so all of you landowners that own wetlands on your property are a phenomenally important resource for protecting our state's wetlands. But just because a certain wetland that you're in love with, like Mary's Rose Lake, might not be in our Wetland Gems book doesn't mean it's not important, doesn't mean it doesn't have incredible value both to the people in their community and to the community for flood and water control and all the other issues that we've talked about here. So thanks, Mary, for that call and for all your great work to protect Wisconsin's wetlands.
Thanks.
Oh, I love them. So keep up the good work yourself.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. We turn to Don in Home next. Don, hello.
Yes, in Holman.
Holman, okay.
Yes. I'm wondering if you would speak to what you do to create a synergy between all of the organizations that are working hard for wetlands. There's Wisconsin Waterfowl, there's Ducks Unlimited, there's many local groups. Everybody seems to think that they're doing the best and only work for the wetlands. And hopefully you have a state consortium or something.
Those are all the organizations that you listed are fine partners of our organization. We all do our own individual work, but we do a lot of work in collaboration. A lot of the policy work that we do is in collaboration with the groups that you listed there. There's also a group that's coordinated by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources called the Wetland Team, which brings together both agency, state and federal agencies and local nonprofit groups to come together and talk about what some of the biggest issues are and how we can collaborate on the way that we approach solutions to those problems. And so we have to promote our own selves because we're membership-based organizations, and that's part of how you recruit members is doing great work and talking about it. And we hope anybody listening might be interested would join our organization. But we do work carefully together, and we'll continue to do that because, as you point out, it's a very, very important way to get things done.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Don. And Brian in Denmark, Wisconsin, emailed, say, I have a large 3-plus acre wetland I created in a former hayfield with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Cooperation. It's 3 to 6 feet deep macs in a series of small, quote, quote, holes. I later added a pond that is attached to the wetlands, about an additional acre, 12 to 15 feet deep, wondering if there's a way to control algae and duckweed that is not, you know, that's in the pond without doing damage to the ecology of the attached wetlands. I'm planting trees around the edges to give it some shade, but it will be years before those get around to helping out.
Yeah, and this is a little bit out of my area of expertise. I will say often there are algae blooms where you've got, or duckweed, where you've got high nutrient inputs to the water. And so that's one thing you might want to take a look at. But I'll also refer you to our website. We have a wetland directory, wetland professionals directory, where wetland professionals, whether public agency folks or private consultants who have expertise with wetlands, can list their contact information and their areas of expertise to try and connect folks like you with people that might have the answers to your questions. So go to our website and take a look for the wetland professionals directory, and hopefully you can find somebody there that can give you some more specific advice about how to control that problem.
And let's go back to this guide again and review again what we've got with this guide, Katie.
Sure. Well, what we decided to do was build on existing really high-quality planning documents that have been put together by the Nature Conservancy and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, just to name a few. These groups have gone out and made lists and gone through very extensive processes to identify important conservation areas within the state of Wisconsin. We went through all those plans, pulled out all of the wetlands, and sort of winnowed it down to a list of 100 so that we could have representatives of high-quality wetlands in each region of the state that collectively all of the different wetland types that we have in Wisconsin are represented in these 100. So they are all high-quality sites, they all were recognized in these other documents.
And we've talked about the photography, which is just beautiful for each one of them. But then again, go back over what in terms of the content and the writing and so forth.
Yeah, the content will give you a flavor for what makes that site unique, special things about the site. Is it the largest floodplain forest in the state of Wisconsin, or is it the most important breeding area for the golden-crowned warbler? Or am I missing my bird species here? I'm a little embarrassed about that. But what makes that site unique? Why is it significant? And also some information about some species that you might expect to see there if you came for a visit.
And also there's a map inside.
There's a statewide map that shows with little dots where all the sites are. And then starting each section for the 8 regions of the state, there's a map of that region that indicates the locations of those sites. And I should point out that because our purpose is education and outreach, there's no boundaries indicated on these where the gem is and isn't. There's just a dot on a map. And so it's the area that we're talking about that's significant, and there's not a sort of inside the line and outside of the line for this particular program.
Yeah, and the photographers, again, beautiful photography and all donated. And you do list all the photographers in the book as well, which I think is great.
Well, and I think if folks are looking for beautiful pictures of wetlands and they can contact some of these professionals, I hope we can bring some business to some of these photographers to thank them for donating their work to this book.
And again, to get a copy of the book, where do we go?
We can call our office at 608-250-9971 or visit our website where you can find an order form, and that's wisconsinwetlands.org. And if you own a bookstore or a nature center gift shop and are interested in stocking this book, I hope you'll give us a call and let us know. We did a very small printing of this book because we needed to know whether it was going to go. And it's going off the shelves, flying off the shelves. And so I think an additional printing is inevitable. And we'd like to know if you'd like to stock this book and see if we can't work something out that can benefit wetlands in Wisconsin.
Well, Katie, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's always my pleasure, Larry. Thank you so much.
Katie Belfus is the Outreach Programs Coordinator or Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, works out of Madison, and really glad to have her with us. And I'm sure we'll have her back. And I'm sure that we'll be talking about green travel in southern Wisconsin tomorrow, and we'll also talk about with Erica Janik about her short history of Wisconsin. Stay with us.